Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Talking Comics Podcast. It is a Wednesday, November 10th, 2021, and you're listening to episode number 520. I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me for this week's show is Mr. Bob Reier.
There were no comics this week? Come on, Marvel. Come on, DC.
Aaron Amos, are you here?
If you can hear the sirens, I've only got a few minutes left.
Oh, no.
Yikes.
And John Burkle, why don't you pull up a chair?
Whoever thought daylight savings time is a good thing should come have to negotiate with my 2-year-old that she has to stay in bed an extra hour.
Oh, no. Was that the complaint that was lodged?
She got up at 5 a.m. rather than 6 a.m.
Were you awake at that point? Get up at like the ass crack of dawn?
I was up already, but that's me time. I don't want to hang out with a 2-year-old.
That's my comic book reading time, damn it.
Let's hope they never get around to listening to this podcast then. Huh?
Oh, I told her to her face that. We're very honest here.
Yikes.
Wonderful, wonderful.
The Midwest thing. You just got to shoot straight. Yep.
She just smiles at me and continues to eat her cinnamon roll. She doesn't care.
Cinnamon roll, like a Cinnabon cinnamon roll?
No, Pillsbury cinnamon roll.
Yeah,
the human-sized Cinnabon.
Yeah, it was Sunday morning. It was a cinnamon roll morning.
Have you ever had to make the Pillsbury Doughboy sound for one of your kids? Have they ever requested that?
They don't know who the Pillsbury Doughboy is, and I'm going to keep it that way.
What kind of father are you?
A good one.
Not much anymore, Steve.
No. You know,
those commercials aren't around the way they used to be.
I did have to explain who the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is because they're watching the trailers for that, the new Ghostbusters. And
yeah, that new Ghostbusters looks good.
I know. I think we're going to crank out the original for them, for the older ones at least.
Where do you stand on Ghostbusters 2?
It's not the worst thing ever made, but it's not the best thing. We could have done without it, but it's enjoyable for what it is.
That's about right. I think I prefer the 2016 one to Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. The Melissa McCarthy one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's... I didn't mind that. I don't know why it got beat up so badly.
I know why.
My childhood! You put women in it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, all the misogynists out there. I forgot about them.
I think we all know why that movie got beat up.
Yeah. Well, the people who hate it for that reason, they suck. So...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of the same people that were coming after Eternals for, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Did that come out? No, I'm sorry.
I hear there's a podcast about that.
Is there?
Yes. Wow, look at that segue. Look at that segue. I was going to talk about fucked up cereal mascots, but we can move on. We did an Eternals movie review podcast. So if you're wondering why we're not talking about Eternals on this show, it's because we've already done it. And it is there for your listening pleasure. We put that out on Monday morning. That is myself, Aaron, and Joey.
No. Get out of here.
No.
That's right. That's
no.
Right. We, as he put it, we took him out of the closet and dusted him off. And, you know, sprinkled a little water on him, slapped him in the face, and we're like, come on, get back in there, kid. Let's go.
Cut me.
I did not know how much he does not like John. I did not know that.
Yeah, he did talk some trash about you the show.
He really does not like John.
I know.
Something went down somewhere. I feel like there's a story, but I don't know.
I don't know what I did to him. but
well, we'll get to the bottom of it one of these days.
If he ever comes back.
He's coming back.
I'm kidding.
He's coming back for the award shows.
Awesome.
He'll be back. Yeah, so we've got the Eternals movie review podcast that is out now. So go and download that, share it with your friends, and you know, email us, tweet us, let us know what you thought of Eternals. What else do we got going on here? We have a new podcast now. I am not aware of when this will be debuting, but I do know that at least 3 episodes worth of it are already in the can and in the process of being edited. We're just waiting for some artwork and some other stuff to come along. But Bronwyn and Chris Carey are going to be launching their own podcast called Thirsty on Tune. And this is going to be a comic book podcast dedicated to the Webtoon app and Tapas and other things of the like. They have a lot of stuff to talk about. I've heard some of the conversations here and there while hanging out while they're podcasting. And it is a hilarious and insightful show. Watching them become friends and kind of having this bizarre chemistry that they do. I think it's going to be a very entertaining show for people to listen to. And so we'll let you know when that drops, and we hope that you check it out and enjoy it. And you can also follow them on Twitter. I think it's at Thirsty on Tune for their account. Yeah, go give them a follow and they will update you on when that show is going to be coming. I'm pretty sure it'll be on this feed. So if you're already subscribed to Talking Comics via whatever, you know, streaming app or download app or whatever the kids call it these days, you'll get that show too. Last but not least.
Wait, I have a question.
Sure.
When you say Tapas, is that some sort of streaming service, or are you talking about small plate food?
You know what? I had that question, but I just said I'm not going to ask.
Tapas is very much like a Webtoon app in that it is like a fan curated and, you know, fan forward, independent comic book writer, artist, that sort of thing. I have managed to find some really, really impressive comics on Webtoon. I haven't checked out Tapas so much. I do have it on my iPad or whatever, but I mean, Bronwyn's list of things that she's subscribed to and actively reading is like almost as large as my comic book reading list.
Wow.
She is a monster when it comes to reading. She reads so fast. When we're both reading something, if we know that she's going to be coming onto this show, she blows through and already has her notes done before I finish the first issue. It's wild. But they hit it off real well and said, you know, let's take these conversations that we're having in Snapchat and whatever and turn them into a podcast. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun for people to listen to. And you'll definitely be exposed to a lot of comics that you probably never knew about. And, you know, part of the fun is discovering new things, trying new things. And I've read some of the comics that they're talking about, and I don't talk about them here, but I'm reading them outside the show. And there's some weird and wild stuff out there on Webtoons, and they're going to talk about it. So anyway, speaking of talking about comics, we are getting very, very close to our end of the year awards. This is going to be our 10th award show since we started the podcast. Ooh. I know, it's a big deal. We've kind of been teasing it. We're going to have at least one more category. We're still deciding how we're going to deliver it, whether it's going to be a part of the show or maybe a separate thing.
Or both. Or both.
You know, or maybe, you know, we'll do half of it on the main show, and then we'll have like a dedicated podcast to kind of flesh it out. We just wanted to do something because it's 10 years. Got to spice it up little bit, but all your favorite categories will likely be back, and there's a good amount of comics. 2021 was a weird ass year for comics, but there were some real gems throughout the year. And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of them. But if you have suggestions for things that you think that we should read or consider or whatever, or just want to tell us what your favorite comics are. No.
We have enough to read. Come on. No, it's a good idea because so many people talk to us afterwards and say, how come you didn't read this or do that? Well, we can't read everything. We can't find everything. Yeah. So those, all kidding aside, those suggestions are very, very welcome.
Yeah. The only things that we can nominate are the things that we've read, right? Yes. So when you get those messages and those emails, rah, 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 I can't believe it. Blah, blah, blah. Like, believe it. Did you hear about it on the show at all throughout the year? No? Well, it's kind of how it works. But, you know, make your own list and use our categories, make your own list and shit, send it to us. We'll read them out. We'll check them out. We'll consider them. All that jazz.
But you only have a couple of weeks to do that.
Right. Speaking of only having a couple of weeks before we get into our lightning rounds, by the way, this is a very light show. So we're kind of vamping a little bit, as you can tell. I know some people don't like it when we drag it out before we get to the comics, but it's just the way it's going. Where is everybody at with their categories? Is there anything in particular that's tripping you up, or do you feel pretty confident about the way that it's going? John, you mentioned in our chat that you're you're feeling a little out of depth.
I've been going through my I keep a list of everything I read in a year. And I haven't narrowed it down. I was like, ooh, maybe this one. No, that was really good. And ooh, picking one is so hard, but I'm getting closer. I still got a couple weeks here, but I will probably be making changes right up until we record.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been there. I've done that probably every year. Or while somebody's giving their testimonial, I'm moving things around. Bob, you usually do your... You write your stuff down in pencil, right? So you can erase and replace.
Well, the ones that are on the fence, I've got my second draft together. There are some things have moved to pen, but there will always be three or four near the bottom that are sort of, oh, this could be, but this could be here too. And then you want to hear someone's passion for something else and join right in. I'm in decent shape. So there's some things that could be moved around even on my own list. The publisher is going to be tough this year because I hate all of them.
I don't think that we're doing publisher. We didn't do publisher last year, and I didn't include it as
good
as a part. Yeah, I don't think we need to do publisher. It was fine for a while when like everybody was still kind of feeling themselves out, but there are a lot of them. A lot more certainly than when we started this thing. And I don't know. It feels weird to do publisher stuff. I would rather celebrate the creators than the publishers, especially since there's always stuff going on in publishers that like we don't know.
Yeah.
And you hear stories and you hear about
this company didn't pay the people. These people are in bed with Comicsgate. These people do the right thing by their creators. They give them a ticket to the movie and say, good luck. Yeah, thanks.
We're always like a breath away from bad news about whomever. And I don't know. That category has always been kind of a whatever for me. So I don't mind losing it. I don't think that the list that I have in front of me is not it's not a part of it.
Yeah.
Good. So best comic book film is going to be an interesting one this year. There was a surprising amount of comic book related movies throughout the year. And there's quite a few good ones. So,
and will Far From Home make the cut, or is that coming a little too late?
No, that'll be early December. I think that comes out.
No, it comes out right around Christmas.
Oh, maybe the 20th.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we don't have to worry about that one.
But isn't it hands down the Snyder cut?
I give thumbs down to this Snyder cut.
No, the list is this. It's Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Black Widow, The Suicide Squad, Eternals, Zack Snyder's Justice League, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, or whatever the hell it's called.
Morbius, King, right? Because that came out.
Morbius got moved. Came out at least twice. Yeah, Morbius is now in January, so that one doesn't count. I guess Spider-Man doesn't come out until, Spider-Man can't be, it could be nominated next year, but it can't be, Spider-Man's going to be a wash because nobody's going to go through the trouble of nominating it next year.
Spider-Verse, same plan, and that end up tying with Captain Marvel for our best of that year. Remember?
Yeah, I remember. I remember voting for Spider-Man is what I remember. So that'll be cool. I'm in pretty good shape. I'm looking at my best TV show be a nice category this year. I'm leaving a few spaces open because I want to hear what other people have to bring to the table. I've already got all my graphic novels picked out.
That's always a tough one for me. I need you guys to help me on that one always. I think I have some nice picks, but there's so many. We could, generally speaking, over the last couple of years, that's been the category where there could be 20 nominees. Big fight.
It's going to be interesting. I got to go through the list again and figure out how many we're allowed to nominate, because I think I might have too many nominations in some of these categories.
On the tens, we were doing five. On the categories where we have 10 picks, we were each doing five, as I recall.
It's that time of year again.
See, I thought we were doing one.
This is your first one, right, John?
Yeah, it's my first one.
Oh, then you have nothing to complain about.
Oh no, I'm not complaining. I'm just feeling overwhelmed at the moment.
Everyone does the first time. This sounds like a whole other discussion, doesn't it?
And then I'm getting, can the breakthrough writer be the best ongoing writer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'm good. Yes. I'm fine.
Yes. I've only got two breakthrough writers written down so far. I think one of them's a lock. But we'll see.
Breakthrough artist is tough for me, but we'll see. We'll see where we go with that. I gotta look through the books again.
It's gonna get real. Okay. Enough talk. Let's do some lightning rounds. Aaron. Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Oh, come on. Give me more than that. I'll wait. All right, John.
I thought so.
You have an imaginary amount of minutes on the clock, my friend. You want to go.
Have a seat, John.
Wait, who's going?
I'm going.
Okay.
Get right up on that microphone. Whisper to me about comics. Come on, ASMR me.
All right, hold on a second. I actually about to cough just as you say that. Hold on. Literally, just to say that, I'm like, I better take a swig. I'm about to cough. And I don't know if they would appreciate hearing that. All right, here we go. Actually, because I got a lot to talk about, so I'm really going to try to narrow it all down and be like very basic with each one, because I think there's something good about each one of these. So here we go. All right, so we're going to start with first book, Last Flight Out, number 3, Mark Guggenheim, Eduardo Ferragato, and Natalia Marquez. So as you recall, this is a book about the end of the planet coming about because of the impacts of global warming and climate change and all that stuff. And they have decided that the best approach for all this is to get the hell off the planet. So you have Dr. Ben Kaywood, who has spent the better part of his life figuring out how to do this and building the very expensive, very large ships that are taking billions of people off planet. In the process of doing that, he essentially neglected his family, lost his marriage. Kind of lost his marriage as well as his daughter. So here we are, present day. The last ship is about to leave and he cannot find his daughter because she's basically ignoring him. So now you're all caught up. So now he's off trying to find out where she is, trying to track her down because he believes she needs to be rescued. And he is forced to take along with him military detail. And that military detail along with him, end up in the, I'm just going to call it the wastelands of Chicago, because things have just gotten very, very bad. Warlords have risen up, and, you know, it's a bad situation. It's a very Escape from New York type situation going on there. Well, they do find his daughter, and she makes it very clear, thanks for coming, but I'm not leaving. And the reason I'm not leaving is very plain and simple. I'm not going to spoil it, but it causes some tension amongst those people that risk their lives to come find her. And some things have to happen to sort of get the story moving to the next point. A little bit of blackmail, a little bit of violence, a little bit of intrigue, and a very odd perspective of a shot on the last panel of the last page. I'm not really sure what to take from it. It really depends on how you're looking at it, but I think this is ratcheting up pretty quickly. I like the first issue. Didn't know how much, where it was going to go. I like the next issue more, and I'm really liking this one even more. So let's see where it goes. So next book, Strange Academy presents The Death of Dr. Strange. As we have reported, Dr. Strange is dead. So Scotty Young, Mike Del Mundo. Now, why is this important? Because the Sorcerer Supreme is responsible for keeping a lot of checks and balances in place simply by his existence. And this is across dimensions, time, and space. Well, his death has an impact on all that stuff. We find out via flashbacks that Doctor Strange once helped the Enchantress get out of a deal where she was supposed to give up her firstborn child in order to basically get a diamond, or a jewel, rather. Well, she never thought she was going to have kids, so she didn't really care so much. So she finds herself in a little bit of a predicament when Doctor Strange's death frees that their demon, and now he comes looking for his reward. And he comes for her kids. Well, Eirik, you're up. So Eirik and Alvi, they pick Eirik. Eirik is snatched, and hilarity ensues. No. Alvi basically tracks down his mom, who, you know, he's never really had the best relationship with, and somehow convinces her to help find his brother. Unsuspectingly, this whole thing turns into quite a moving little display from the Enchantress that I'd never expected, and is largely largely due to what transpired in Captain Marvel. I really enjoyed this. It continues to give that heart with a little bit of adventure, and introducing even more characters. So, Doctor Strange, The Death of Doctor Strange from Strange Academy Presents, I really liked it. Crossover number 9, Donny Cates, D. Cunniff, John J. Hill, and Jeff Shaw. We're still trying to make heads or tail of what's going on here, but here's the best I can say. Essentially, they've determined that this whole thing, everything that's happened, is essentially because the realization between the relationships between the creators and characters is almost like they're personal gods. And they have impact on those creators. Well, someone is wanting to kill the impact on those creations. Someone's wanting to kill all those creators, and they're going about doing it very cleverly, to be honest with you. You continue to see this sort of cavalcade of characters that you recognize being, you know, flown through this book, because they really are not breaking the fourth wall, but being very meta about it. There's some saga talk in here and some Brian K. Vaughan, but the last victim on the last page may be the cause of a, let's just say, catastrophe. That's all I'm going to say. The Magic Order number 2, Mark Millar, Stuart Immonen. I love The Magic Order number 1. I'll be very brief. Essentially, it's sort of like The Sopranos meets Harry Potter. That is actually what Olivier Coipel told me when I asked him about it at New York Comic Con. It's a very good book. I would definitely say go back and read it. Quick summary, you have this magic family that's sort of in charge of, you know, magic of the world. Not in charge of, but basically it's one of the ruling families of magic in the world. I wouldn't say an ancient enemy, but a very powerful enemy comes back to wreak havoc. And long story short, they have to unwield some pretty unsavory magic to beat that evil back. And we're now in volume 2, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Doesn't quite drop in this issue, but you do get a lot of good family relationships, how things are restructured now because of the impacts of the last book. You know, we got our main character, Cordelia Moonstone, who is the person who cast that big spell, and we're all waiting to see, you know, what happens next. But, you know, you're learning that because of all the things that she did to save the family in the last book, she is now in charge. And she's not really sure she's up for it. and neither are those people around her. So, you know, she was kind of the lazy, no-account, drunken savior of the family. Anyway, we find ourselves just really waiting to see what's coming up next. We see a lot of violence. We see a lot of love. We see a lot of magical toys. And it's all really starting to be a little freaky because we're going back and forth between the two quite a bit. And I'm not really sure where to go. I don't know if some kid's going to get her head chopped off or something. I don't know. It's just becoming very violent, but still very engaging. I really, really love this book. I really loved Mark Millar's sort of voice in the previous version. And I miss Olivier Coipel's art, but Stuart Eminem, you can't beat. So I would say pick it up. Last thing I'm going to talk about super quickly, Young Justice Phantoms, episodes 1-4. I did not even know this had begun to air again. I just want to talk about it super, super briefly. Carolyn Coca, Professor Dr. Carolyn Coca, Eisner Award winner, brought this up to me. Mentioned this to me, and she kept harping on me to watch episodes 1-4. So I finally sat down and watched episodes 1-4, and I still love this show. I fall in love with the show again and again every time I watch it. And I have actually gone back and watched the entire series multiple times just because it's just that good. Probably one of the better storylines that have been told in the DC universe, animated or otherwise. And I don't know why they're not getting these people to do all the other things in DC. But in any event, we find a very, very interesting scenario here where we are using the relationship between Superboy and Ms. Marvel to really talk about what's going on in the world today. It's a very race-heavy conversation, not just race, but gender identity. There's a lot of things being spoken about here in the midst of this story of being a superhero. I really love the way they're doing this. And the final episode of this arc, the first four episodes was an arc. There's five episodes out now, but the first four episodes was an arc. That final episode of that first arc had some serious weight to it. It seems like they've definitely grown from the show it was episode 1, season 1, to the show it is now, episode 4, season 4. Definitely recommend checking out. It's on HBO Max. Really, really great show. And that is my lightning round.
All right. My first question.
Yep.
What kind of magical toys are we talking about here?
There's birthday presents, man. There's birthday presents. It's children's toys, but they've been brought to life. It was just that book was just an emotional roller coaster in some ways, because one minute you do have these beautifully drawn family pictures, and then the next minute you have someone disemboweled somewhere, and you're like, "All right, well, this is give me a minute to prepare for the shift." But it's just I don't know. I just fell in love with the first book. Just the structure of the first book, the art of that first book was amazing. I really didn't think he could do better than Olivier Coipel. And I won't say that Stuart Eminem is better than Olivier Coipel, but he's definitely sort of carrying that very dramatic torch, which I love. What's your next question?
I was just going to go on about how we don't have HBO Max here. We've got Crave, but I'm not sure if all HBO Max content shows up on that app, or if that's just like some stuff and not all stuff. I don't know. If you're out there and you're listening and you know the deal, let me know. John, you got your name attached to a bunch of these. Why don't you jump in here?
I'm with Aaron. The Magic Order number, the first six issues was incredible. It blew me away. I like some Mark Millar stuff, but some of the stuff he did for his Millar World and Netflix just felt kind of like it was just a pitch for a TV show, but the Magic Order was just, it was so good. And it had so many like dramatic moments and big action sequence. And I too was a little worried with Olivier Coipel not returning for this, but Stuart Immonen is like, I'm not going to compare the two, but if you're going to replace Coipel, this is the way to do it. And the way this book opened in the former Soviet bloc with the old magic and people maybe feeling a little bit repressed and then you jump all over the place. And this book jumps everywhere, but it makes so much sense. And it's just so good. And it's just nice to have this back. And if they keep putting these out and keep changing up the artists with this much quality, then this is a book I hope sticks around for a long time. And then Crossover 9, I love how Donny Cates is using some of these other people's characters with the powers and detectives here, and just always picking out who's in the background. The story, it's still a little confusing, but I'm any book that has Chip Zdarsky spooning Chip Zdarsky at one point in time, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to. And so,
it is a little bit. I have to say this issue, I understood it was a little bit more cut and dry in terms of what it was saying than the previous one. The previous one was sort of like, what? What's going on? But I mean, I think what they're trying to do is get you to sort of really drill down and sort of put all the pieces together, you know, now sort of recognizing that there you probably didn't have enough pieces of the puzzle previously to begin to make sense of it. But now they're saying, OK, you should have enough. So we're going to explain it to you.
Yeah.
And this whole idea of, all right, well, we have essentially two types of people, those from one side and one from the, you know, those from this side. And, you know, the impact that those people from our world have on their world is life and death.
Yeah.
And so someone decided to end that. And that's how we have the crossover.
Yeah.
Are they doing anything? Cause I haven't read this new arc. Yeah. The last issue that I read was the Zdarsky one. Are they doing like cool things with the concept of them kind of being othered by being comic book characters and being within the real world, quote unquote?
Well, not really.
Yeah, no. I was gonna say,
well, like it's not a I don't know, allegory or whatever. The
no, because they're still segregated and hidden.
Yeah,
and then, yeah. So if you see a comic character in the general public, you're supposed to call 911.
Yeah.
Yeah, but doesn't that have its own subtext?
Yeah, but they're not using it like that. I mean, it's not. That was kind of how the first arc was. They've kind of gotten away from that in this arc. This is more of the, I guess, the mystery portion.
Yeah, trying to figure out who's killing these people. They recognize that these people were created by right. These people are in another dimension and were created by people here. So it's not as though it's a scenario where they've been raised with this other race of people and therefore, you know, they are other. But more so like, you're not supposed to be here. You're some kind of bizarre dimension crossing, you know, whatever. You're not supposed to be here. You're wrong. So we need to figure out how to get you back. But instead of trying to get them back, they're locking them all up.
Yeah. And then the whole, like, you're created by somebody, but is the only way you can be free is to remove yourself from the creator. That seems to be the next big movement of this story. And I don't know how long this book can go on, but it feels like it's going to have a definite end.
It has to, yeah.
Yeah. And like maybe two or three arcs.
It has to. There's. I mean, essentially, they're running through all your fate. I will say this: they've moved into the big two now.
Yeah, they have.
In terms of character, they've moved deep into the big two. And like I said, that last page.
And that company doesn't have a sense of humor.
Nope, it could be a batastrophe. That's all I'm saying.
Oh,
I repeated it.
They'll buy this book too and neuter it just like they did the Authority.
Who knows? Who knows? It's all possible.
Oh my God. Okay. sorry. No, I just got an email notification of something that made me gasp. Oh, comic books. Uh-huh. I got to get caught up with crossover. I might, when we wrap it up here, I think that might be my nightly reading. The Magic Order sounds awesome. I might have to check that out.
I'm sure the first volume, you can probably borrow it on Comixology.
Pretty sure, as a matter of fact.
It's so good. And you can read it within an hour. It's quick.
It really is. It's just that good.
Unlike a book that I'll be talking about later that I borrowed from Comixology. Oof. Okay. I looked at the page count on that thing and I was like, really? Okay, then. All right. Anybody else have any comments or questions for Aaron?
No X-Men?
No, I got plenty stacked up, but I'm trying to give our readers a break.
Okay.
Don't worry, I'll be back. Don't you worry.
No Colossus jaw droppers this week.
I'll be back.
Ooh, that man's twisted.
I need to read that.
Oh,
you guys keep talking about it.
It took a twist. I did not say.
Oh, shut up.
I told you that's where the gaps comes from.
I think that we dropped that picture and Joey's like, what the hell's up with Colossus? Read the book.
He's like,
all right, Bob, help me put an end to this.
I don't know that I can, but here we go.
Gosh. Are you ready for your lightning round?
Yes. considering that I spoke about MOM, Mom, last week, a miniseries about a superhero, super-powered mother, I guess you could say that I'm leaning into the Madonna whore complex this week by revisiting the Pro one-shot from 2002. With a script by Garth Ennis, pencils and lettering by Amanda Connor, inks by Jimmy Palmiotti, colors by Paul Mounce, it is probably, it is certainly the most profane thing I have ever read, and also maybe the most hilarious. Story goes like this. An alien called the Viewer, he makes a wager with his robot assistant that all Earthlings have greatness within them, even, as he puts it, a soiled dove such as our working girl heroine. She's not particularly thrilled with the superpowers granted to her, at least until she's told that the League of Honor, and you know who they must be, well, that's a paying gig. Her new situation leads to some really out there interactions with both the public and her teammates, climaxing, yes, I did say that, in a very surprising and touching in its own way finale. Look, this book isn't for everyone, certainly. But if you're looking for some really deconstructed superhero fare, the Pro will be right up your alley. Yes, I said that too. For more on Amanda Connor, there's an IDW volume called The Art of Amanda Connor that covers her history, including some very rare sketches. There's also a DC collection called The Sequential Art of Amanda Connor as well. Now, side note, way back when, in early days of Talking Comics, when Jimmy and Amanda's Harley Quinn relaunch was just beginning, they guested with us, and they were both tickled that I wanted to chat about this book because, as Ms. Connor has said, the Pro is my baby. Give it a shot if you're willing to really go out there. Since the Walter Mosley thing was apparently delayed again, I did some archiving and reread what Marvel reprinted as The Thing Liberty Legion. This was a multi-part, multi-title epic from 1976 that ran through Invaders number 5 and 6, Marvel Premiere 29 and 30, Fantastic Four Annual 11, Marvel 2-in-1 Annual, and finished up in Marvel 2-in-1 number 20. This tale of World War II heroes was written, of course, by Roy Thomas, the keeper of the Golden Age Flame. He threw some of their modern counterparts in, too. You have art by Rich Buckler, Don Heck, Frank Robbins, John Buscema, and Sal Buscema, with most of the covers being done by Jack Kirby, no less. So, the invaders, Cap, Namor, the Torch, and Toro, are being mind-controlled by the Red Skull. But Bucky has escaped, and using the power of the old-fashioned broadcast radio, he's gathered a new team to draw out the Skull and hopefully capture their enthralled comrades. The Liberty Legion is composed of Timely Comics' C-Team, the Red Raven, the Thin Man, the Patriot, Jack Frost, Blue Diamond, plus two bigger stars, Miss America and, guys, hold the laughs, The Whizzer. I know you guys love that. This culminates in a huge battle at Yankee Stadium with predictable but fun results. You know, that summer's Fantastic Four and Marvel 2-in-1 annuals where the FF discover, with the help of the Watcher, because he's always around, that the time stream has gone awry and the Nazis have won World War II. Using Doctor Doom's time machine, they go back to make things right, first fighting and then teaming up with the invaders, and then Ben joins the Liberty Legion for a solo trip back in time as well. This great Bronze Age storytelling from just masters of the form, and it was still a blast to read after all these years, and I do want to thank the already mentioned Professor Carolyn Coca for picking this up for me at a New York Comic Con a couple of years ago. So that's it for me.
Lovely. Man, I haven't read The Pro in a very, very long time. I think that's the second time that book's come up this year on the podcast. Didn't you read that not too long ago?
No, I read it somewhere.
You know what?
Someone brought it to the table.
It was a listener question thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what it was.
God, when I read that back when it first came out, and I was like, that was like when Garth Ennis and his kind of raunchiness was the cup du jour of comics, and God, that book just cracked me up.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. And Connor's art is so good.
She's one of my absolute favorites, and it just struck me after reading the other thing last week. And this one, where she does the lettering too, it's really pretty amazing. And very profane. As you say, Garth Ennis and this crew, there's a quote on the back of my version of it. It's a quote from Gail Simone. This is the comic that Garth, Amanda, and Jimmy will be apologizing for in heaven minutes before being sent directly to hell. But hey, if their eternal damnation is the only downside, then I demand a sequel.
I like that. Aaron, have you ever read The Pro?
I've not. I'm actually, while you're talking about it, I'm clicking away doing some research here.
Oh yeah. The League of Honor, which is they're the Justice League, and they are composed of, well, we have the Saint, who is Superman, the Knight and his valiant young companion, the Squire, the Lady, which is sort of Wonder Woman. Speedo, who is the Flash, but dressed in a Speedo, and the Lime. Instead of the Green Lantern, he has a lime on his chest.
Oh, my God.
And they're like regular folks, and they show up floating outside her apartment. And, yeah, I think I saw you on TV. You can't knock on the door like normal people, huh? And she's holding her screaming kid. I swear I'm going to strangle this little bleep one of these days. That's the kind of book this is. It's hysterical.
Alrighty. Yeah. All right.
Not safe for work. Not even safe for home, perhaps, but certainly not safe for work.
Not yet. Definitely not for the faint of heart. You got to have a little bit of a twisted sense of humor. But if you do, it is a mighty good time.
Yes. When the poor Superman character, the Saint, has an encounter with our unnamed heroine, the Pro, things go very awry during their close encounter.
He's a very repressed man.
He's very repressed. And when unleashed, he knocks a plane out of the sky.
Oh. Oh my.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my. Well, you know, I think everyone can relate after the never mind.
Some of the roots of the boys are in this.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. There's a lot that has come in the nearly 20 years since.
Yeah,
of this deconstruction of superheroes that is here.
Yeah,
am I the only one that heard that? Okay, never mind.
I try not to bring everything to everybody's attention.
Okay, carry on.
Oh boy. Yeah. Anybody else for anything? That Art of Amanda Connor book. I bet that's something.
Yeah, it's a big hardcover from IDW. We're looking at hundreds and hundreds of illustrations and a page count of more than 200. Covers their whole career, advertising, television. They wanted to do an animated version of The Pro, for instance, we find out here.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
Adult Swim, that's the only place it's going.
Oh, yeah.
You can do HBO Max now.
Yeah, I think I wrote the story for that. When that was announced, however many years ago.
Sounds at least annoying. 10, probably. Yeah, it was quite a while ago. Amanda's just she's one of my favorite artists. There's so much humor in what she does, and she still manages to be a great visual storyteller, panel to panel, page layouts, the whole mess. Knows how to do this correctly and manages a wickedness that is pretty special.
Yeah.
She's definitely what in the day would have been called a good girl artist or a pinup artist as well, but that does not overwhelm the work itself. Mm-hmm. There's some really, really good stuff. She's a great person, too.
Yeah, I was going to say she is. She's wonderful. Aside from having her on the show all that time ago, bumping into them at cons is always a real treat. Remember having at least a few, you know, nice discussions with them.
Well, the first time I met them, I think it was the first con we went to, and I actually got a Power Girl print signed here. And I mentioned to them, we had made arrangements to get them on the show, and DC had intervened.
Yes, I remember
that. DC had said, no, you can't do that. So I spoke to Jimmy and Amanda. They were sitting next to each other. And he said, well, we could do it right here, because they're not around to eavesdrop. So
yeah,
I said you can come on the show, and they're not going to eavesdrop over there either. And they were amazing. They were just tremendous guests. They have their own show going. You don't even have to say anything; just let them go.
Stick it to the man.
Yeah,
I like it. Guerrilla Radio for talking comics.
Have you guys read her Power Girl? The Amanda and Jimmy back in the day when they actually tried to fix all that had gone wrong with her 14 origins.
Yeah, I really like that book. Yeah, they did two arcs, didn't they? Like two separate series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I anytime Amanda Connor does interiors, I try to find it, and I've always had a soft spot for Power Girl, and that was and then they did try to fix a disaster there, and they did a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, brought in the Psycho Pirate and tried to put the two Earths back together, as opposed to her being from Atlantis or wherever else they were trying.
The great granddaughter of Arion, the wizard, and Jesus.
It's like, no, go away. Just go away with stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's before my time. No idea what you guys are talking about. Look, I think I own those, though. I think I got those from Rob all those years ago.
Reread them. They've just been sitting. Yeah. They're a hell of a lot of fun. And their Terra miniseries as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I have that. I've definitely read that. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. They did a Harley Quinn and Power Girl, like, six issue a few years ago,
that
too.
That was nice.
When they had, like, the 1970s action guy with the mustache.
The porn mustache, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, their Harley is the Harley that's in these cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
It is not the Paul Dini Harley. It is the Amanda and Jimmy Harley.
I have the Harley Quinn, like, Coney Island cover print signed by Amanda, framed and up in the house. I love that.
The one thing they haven't done in the cartoon show that they need to get to is the Scatapult.
Oh, yeah.
Where Harley builds a catapult on the roof to take care of all the feces from the various pets she's rescued and flings it across the East River into DC's window.
We'll see. It'll be an interesting third season. I'm really glad that they're getting to do it. I hope that, that there's a big reception for it when it airs and we can get another season out of it. Amen. Because it's just, it's too good to go away that soon. Even though I maintain that I think that the end of the second season was just flawless and I would have been okay
ending there,
but I'm glad that we're getting more.
Yeah, we are getting the comic book too.
Yes, I got a new issue of that last week. It came out digitally, so I picked it up. I haven't read it yet, though. That comic is a joy to read. All right.
That's enough for me.
John.
Go for John.
Okay.
John, tell me about comic books. Tell me a story.
Oh, I got three stories for you. All right. First up, Batman 116, James Tynion, Jorge Jimenez, and Tomo Morey on colors. So this is the penultimate chapter of Fear State. One to go after this, and I'm having pangs of. I'm really enjoying Tynion's run, and I'm kind of sad to see it go away. And Jorge Jimenez's art, this is defining Batman artwork here that we will remember for years. And I'm sad to see it go, but they are going out in style. Batman finally confronts the Scarecrow. And then we find that the bigger threat is the Peacekeeper One, who's been manipulated throughout this entire Fear State. The magistrates attack Poison Ivy. And if you haven't been reading, Poison Ivy's been split into two. So you have evil poison, and then you have Harley's poison, and they are going to try and, I don't know, reconcile the two. You have some great Ghostmaker moments, and the way Jimenez draws Ghostmaker, I want more of that. This is really setting up a thrilling conclusion. I've really enjoyed all of the Fear State. I like that you can just read the main story here. And then I haven't picked up every ancillary story, but every one I have, I've enjoyed. This is really the way to do an event where you can just read the core event if you want to. And if you want to broaden your horizon, you can, but you don't feel the need to, like in so many other events that we've seen over the past few years. Next, I read Dark Knights of Steel, number one. So this is Tom Taylor and Yasmin Putri. This is the alternate retelling of the Superman mythos, only this time in the Middle Ages. And Kal-El doesn't come here alone, as Laura and Jor-El make the trip as well. And since it's medieval England-esque, I guess we could say, of course, if you have the power of the yellow sun and you're a Kryptonian, you're going to set yourself up as a king and queen. And that's what they've done here. Their rival is Jefferson Pierce, the King Lightning. Batman is a bastard prince of the House of El. And that might have more meaning here than in mainstream bat stories. And his job is to protect them from magic, because magic is the one thing other than kryptonite that can harm a Kryptonian. And he and his Robins, which are all his squires, are on the hunt for a magical woman sent by King Pierce to kill Kal-El. And I think we all know who that magical person is going to be, as this book will broaden the DCU into this Middle Ages time. I love when Taylor does these things. His deceased alternate reality book was really well done. The artwork here is so beautiful. It has like a painted quality to it. I really enjoyed this, and I'm glad that it's a 12 issue miniseries, and I'm in for the entirety of it. And I think I'm just going to enjoy the hell out of it. And then thankfully I got a copy of Righteous Thirst of Vengeance number 2, which I'm not going to give much away. It's in the review folder, Steve. But this is Rick Remender and Andre Lima Orejo. Let's just say, if you don't remember, Righteous Thirst for Vengeance number 1 begins in a rainy Vancouver where just this average Joe happens upon a horrific crime scene. And we kind of leave it there. And in this book, we find out our average Joe protagonist might not be so average after all, or innocent, as there are some good revelations here. Again, not a lot of dialogue, but with art like this, you don't need a lot of dialogue. We both kind of wondered where this book was going to go. We get a little bit more of that here, but I still don't know 100% what this book is going to be, but I really want to find out. So I'm going to stick this one out too. So, and I am done.
How many birds die in this new issue?
No bird deaths.
No bird deaths.
But you got a jogging policeman who tries to set a personal running record to get to each crime scene. I thought that was kind of interesting. So you just get this cop running up in like tight joggers and a tank top to a crime scene. It's like, well, that's not how they arrive every day, but okay.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're still in it. You're still intrigued. You're going to follow along.
I would say I'm more intrigued after this one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn. I didn't realize that was in the review folder. I'm going to have to
check that out. I was just kind of playing. I had some free time after school today, and I was just playing review folder roulette. And I was like, ooh, Righteous Thirst for Vengeance. That won't take very long to read.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a quick one, but that artwork is really, really nice. It really draws you into the story.
Yep.
Sweet. Let me see. What else you got here? You got this Dark Knights of Steel number 1. You mentioned the art. The art is absolutely stunning. It reminded me a little bit of Matea de Ulis, mm-hmm. who did the Jessica Jones books, yep. among some other stuff. I enjoyed it. I will admit, and I think this is more me than the actual story, I found it a little difficult to follow after a while, particularly the Bruce and his like bastard son relationship, where they kind of do somewhat of a reveal at the end. I was completely lost. But again, I think it's one of those things that if I read it again, I would be able to follow it better, because I trust Tom Taylor to mm-hmm. tell a complete and, you know, good comic book story.
Yes. It makes a little bit of sense when he's not injured earlier in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how that's happened to him several times.
Well, I was also a little confused when they both have their helmets off the Clark character and the Bruce character, I think, look quite similar.
And so why would that be?
there was a panel or two, though, where I almost couldn't tell which one was which. And that was when I started to get turned around and kind of left that issue being like, well, I'll probably read the number one again when two comes out just to refresh myself. And maybe I'll have a better handle on it then. But absolutely gorgeous. Love the setting, kind of like this Arthurian magic knights type thing. And it's cool. It's cool to see these characters in a, you know, an alternate reality and know that the consequences of the story are contained within that story and stuff like that. Right. So.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And it counts now.
No.
It really, it really happens. They'll be back.
Is that what they're saying?
That's the new DC, isn't it? Right? Everything is in play.
Well, this could be one of the multiverses. This could be one of the infinite Earths. So, yep, sure. Everything counts.
All right. Well,
we'll just get a righteous thirst of speed metal then in 2 years and
prog metal.
That's the final, the concluding metal.
I'll have to listen to it with a Queensryche soundtrack.
52 different covers.
Sure.
All the way to Norway to finish this one out.
Yeah. I don't know how much I have to add for Batman other than that the creative team's been killing it. Like, Fear State has been really damn good. They made a really, really cool villain out of Saint. And I've grown on Peacekeeper as kind of this tragic villain.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for as much as I do not align or agree with that character and his ideals kind of through this story, he's been put through the ringer.
Yeah.
A lot. Like, a lot.
Yeah. When he's first introduced all the way back in that Infinite Frontier Zero issue with the attack on Arkham, you feel bad for him. And you don't know, he doesn't know what's up from down anymore with all the Scarecrow and Saint and everything that, you feel bad.
Well, he's been manipulated multiple times. And even though he went along with some of those things willingly, the effects of what they were going to do with him were never really explained. Like, consent has been a major problem with that character.
Right. I mean, he thought he was going to be a hero, and now he's finding himself to be the villain.
Yeah. He's like a RoboCop Frankenstein kind of thing at this point.
But he still thinks he's doing the right thing. It's become so tragic.
Well, they've zapped him enough times to the point where I'm like, I don't agree with you, but like, I get it. I get why you're doing what you're doing, because you're so fried out at this point that you believe that that's the path. And I don't blame you, because how could you be in a right state after all the things that they've put you through? Because he's undergone like a few transformations throughout this story.
Yeah. I did like that 2-page spread where he looks at Batman and goes, "You're just a guy dressed up in a pajamas. You don't scare me." And Batman's like, "Yes, I do."
Just to think, like, it's wild to think that started with the Joker War and that whole event of him supposedly rescuing the people in the nurse's wing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you find out a couple more things about that character as they dig into him a bit more, and that he's maybe not the hero that they've made him out to be. But the things that they do to him and the things they promise him and then turn him into is really tragic. I think Tynan has introduced a lot of really cool characters and characters that could last in this series. Like, I think we're getting a Gardner side story or mini or something like that. Something like that's coming out. I think Christian Ward is doing the art for it.
Oh, cool. And Miracle Molly is somebody who can stick around for quite a while.
That character is great. Yeah. I love that character. I've really enjoyed her part of the story so far. Yeah. Have you read that one shot yet?
No, I will.
All right. Well, when we do the exchange of books for the end of the year, and you have access to my stuff, just
give that. I will read that. I have it lying around somewhere. It's just I haven't read it yet. I'm really interested to see where they take the Harley and Poison Ivy next, because I think that's a relationship that they should really give some time and attention to, finally.
Yeah,
in the mainstream. Yeah.
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 Yeah, Poison Ivy's been weird for the last little while, but again, another character that has been through a lot and has been kind of left in a state, a fear state, one might say. All right, enough of that.
Isn't it interesting that all these new characters are coming out of Tynan just before he leaves?
I know. It sucks.
I have faith in Williamson, though. I think Joshua Williamson will pick up the mantle well.
I'm excited. Like, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Every time that I've been like, you know, I guess it's the safe choice, but like the creators that they've had on Batman for as long as I've been reading Batman have delivered more positives than negatives throughout the years. And it's been a really fun ride and a cool character to follow over the past couple of years between the Snyder stuff, the King stuff, the Tynan stuff. And I like Joshua Williamson a lot. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm anxious to see what he'll do with the main title. Bring Clayface back. Like, Batman number one or whatever it is that you're going to do, Clayface on the cover, and you know, all is forgiven. We'll talk about Joshua Williamson in my lightning round. Thank you. Let me bring up the old notes here. I might as well talk about that one first. The Silver Coin, number 6, written by Joshua Williamson, art, colors, and letters by Michael Walsh. If you are not familiar with The Silver Coin, allow me to clue you in. It's an anthology-style horror series from artist Michael Walsh, who's teamed up with some of the comics industry's heaviest hitters to tell spooky stories with one common thread: an ancient, everlasting, and haunted coin that brings death and misfortune to anyone that comes into contact with it. In this issue, titled High Score, a young boy uses the coin at a local arcade and soon finds himself a real live player in the Mortal Kombat-like fighting game Horror Fighter 2X. Great title, by the way. This is by far one of the bloodiest and most brutal issues of this series to date, and perhaps the one that has the most Easter eggs as well. There are several callbacks to other series written by Joshua Williamson in this story, including Edward Charles Warren, a.k.a. Nailbiter, being one of the playable characters in the game. That was very cool. In addition to this being a bloody good time, this issue stabbed me with crazy amounts of nostalgia. I spent a lot of time and quarters in the Smith Haven Mall arcade called Time Out back in the day, and it was also the first place where I'd played Mortal Kombat. So, granted, I never became possessed by an evil coin and ended up slaughtering my teenage opponent, but I digress. This is another stellar issue with some really gross and groovy artwork from Walsh, and I'm really glad that the series has been bumped up to an ongoing because I think that it deserves it. I think it has legs. And I'm also hoping that the boost to ongoing is maybe a sign of a television adaptation down the road. One would hope maybe something for Shudder or HBO Max or Netflix. Something that I have access to, please. It would make for a great, like, Tales from the Crypt creep show style thing, I think. What else do we got here? I'll save that one for last. The Me You Love in the Dark, number 4. Brought this up every time that it's come out because it's just that damn good. Story by Scotty Young, art by Jorge Corona, colors by Jean-Francois Bellieu, and letters by Nate Pikos of Blambot. So, if this issue were a Friends episode title, it would be called The One Where Ro Realizes She's Made a Huge Mistake. To catch you all up, Ro has been romantically involved with an entity living inside of her house. But after several weeks have gone by, she's starting to crave some alone time. Unfortunately, her poltergeist partner proves to be the needy type, and the atmosphere in the house has grown suffocating and rather abusive. The last thing Ro needs while she's trying to figure out how to ditch her spectral suitor is a knock at the front door. Shit. This is not going to end well. This series is so good at doing what it intends to do. And by that, I mean instilling an overwhelming sense of menace and malevolence with each turn of the page. The writing by Scotty Young is spectacular. He's managed to craft and present a truly unique relationship between Roe and the ghost in these four issues, and then really ratchets up the tension as the story shifts to being one about survival and possible escape from an impossible situation. I've also been head over heels with Corona's art throughout the series. His style depicts such tenderness during the good times and such malice in the moments where it's all falling apart. I also love the way that he portrays the entity living inside the house. We've caught glimpses of it in a variety of forms, but it's managed to remain mysterious and almost shapeless throughout the series. Part of me hopes that we get a glorious final issue reveal of this thing, but then there's another part of me that knows that it isn't necessary for this character to be a success. This is 4 of 5. So we've got 1 left to go, and I'm pretty sure that it comes out right before or the week of that we record our stuff. So I'm not going to hide it. You'll definitely be hearing about this series when we do our end of the year stuff. It's been amazing. If you haven't read it yet, definitely go and check it out, or pick it up once it's collected. That should be soon. Next and last on my list is The Human Target, #1, written by Tom King with art by Greg Smallwood and letters by Clayton Cowles. Christopher Chance has made, by the way, this is from the website. It gives away a surprising amount about this first issue, but this is on them. So Christopher Chance had made a living out of being a human target, a man hired to disguise himself as his client to invite would-be assassins to attempt his murder. He has a remarkable career until his latest case protecting Lex Luthor goes sideways. An assassination attempt. Why is this so weirdly written? I didn't read this beforehand. I'm sorry. An assassination attempt Chance didn't see coming leaves him vulnerable and left. You know what? Fuck it. I'm not reading this. Christopher Chance poses as Lex Luthor. He's giving this like Jeff Bezos Zuckerman like presentation on a stage. And it's not just the people in the audience that are watching. It's the multiverse is watching, because apparently Lex Luthor's tech is able to broadcast to all these other planets and places and times and whatever. And he gets shot. And you come to find out this is actually Christopher Chance posing as him. And now we have to find out who is trying to kill Lex Luthor, and why does Christopher Chance suddenly not feel so well? It turns out that he's dying and he has 12 days to live. And each one of these issues, it's a 12 issue series, is going to, I believe, follow one of those days until the end. He actually dies in the opening of the comic. And so we're kind of working backward in time as we're going through it. This series is off to a great start, with King lending his signature writing style to a classic character who's just as determined as he is pragmatic and macabre. Really great personality on this guy. While the story takes place in modern day, Greenwood's slick and sensational art gives the book a swinging 70s Bond aesthetic that I am positively in love with. Seriously, everything from the character and environment designs to the soft psychedelic color palette is really speaking to me. I was blown away with Smallwood's art. Greenwood, where the hell did I get? Greg, that's why. sorry. Shit. I was blown away by Greenwood's art on the Archie horror comic book series Vampironica a few years ago. And like a fine wine, he's only gotten better with age. I know that some readers can get turned off by starting another one of King's 12-issue epics, but I can't help but think that the one-day-at-a-time approach to the story's timeline is going to make reading this series something that's fun to follow issue to issue. I will let you know. But feel free to wait until it's all collected in like 1,000 years. I was really impressed with it. I know that starting a King series could be both a blessing and a curse because you don't know how much of it you're going to get or if it's going to arrive on time. But honestly, with writing this good and characters this cool and artwork that is this stunning, I will wait from issue to issue just to get more of this because it was that impressive. It was very cool. Yeah. And so that is my very jumbled lightning round. Man, they really screwed me on that synopsis.
Yeah, they got you on that one.
Jesus, who wrote this?
Tom King.
Anyway.
Tom King. And it'll make sense.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. It's usually the editors that put together the synopsis.
Nobody edits Tom King. Please.
He's reached that point in his career.
Just there are odd breaks in the punctuation, and I'm just...
E.E. Cummings.
I don't know. It was hard to read. Anyway, obviously, I really enjoyed it. Silver Coin was great. It was gross, but it was great. And the Me You Love in the Dark just gets right under my skin and into my core. There's so much atmosphere in that book. And the way that the relationship turns in this issue is nothing short of brilliant. And I can't believe that this is ending in one more issue. It's only 5 issues long. I guess I get it, but it's so good. I kind of wanted it to hang out for a little bit longer.
Is it something that maybe if it's popular enough, it'll come back? Or do you think it's just finite?
I don't know. I mean, right now, it feels like something that they could wrap up because Ro is in a position where she needs to get out of the house. You know, like her curtains have been drawn for, I believe she's been in there for a couple of months because she's an artist and she's been, what's that?
I think it's almost a year.
Yeah. Mm. She's been preparing for an art show that she's supposed to be, you know, painting pieces for. And at one point in the story, I alluded to it before, her agent or her, you know, whoever's throwing the art show and representing her is coming to check out her wares and see what she's been up to. And it sets the ghost off in a way that we've seen hints of before, but now it's like full throttle, volume up to 11, throwing things around in the house, threatening and, you know, this thing is able to manifest itself and has physical touch. So it's getting dangerous. And I mean, we're one more issue in, this has now become a matter of the two of them making out of it alive. And I would not be surprised. This is not a prediction, but just the way it could go. I would not be surprised if Dude ends up dead and Ro somehow ends up getting absorbed into the house and they haunt it together going forward.
So then you wrap this book up. Here's why. And I don't mean that because I'm really loving it. But this issue should have been entitled The Abuser You Love in the Dark. And they cannot, because of the tone that story took, they cannot draw that out into like a volumes, unless they're going to focus on
the house,
the abuse, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, the house and sort of let go of the abuse part, because that was textbook abuse.
Oh, absolutely.
Textbook abuse. So they can't keep going back to that without some sort of resolution for her, because what you'll have is a woman who is issue after issue, volume after volume, you know, falling victim to an abuser that she can't escape. And I kind of think that can be triggering.
what I'm thinking is if they were to continue this, you end this story with 5, maybe take a break from it. And if there are more stories to tell, maybe turn it into an anthology type thing where the house is the character and it becomes something of an urban legend of, you know, the artist who went into the house and never came out, sort of thing.
I could see somebody, that.
You know, someone's trying to resell it however many years later.
I'll ask Silver Coin.
Yeah, like we get that story. So yeah, could happen.
As soon as I read this issue, I was like, yeah, this is a finite story. I'm not even kidding. I was just like, yeah, because this is becoming very sort of it's on the edge, and it's on the edge in a good way, because I think this is okay. I feel like this story is just about to hit the dismount, and if they fuck it up with the dismount, then we got problems, because it really, really was a really good depiction, as oxymoronic as that might sound, a really good depiction of an abuse story that I think could have value if it is wrapped up well.
Right, if they stick the landing.
If they do it in a way that adds value to someone who's struggling in that situation or something. And I don't think I'm not one of those people who believes that every comic book has to, save the world. But if you're taking on something that has a serious impact to its readers, then try to do it some justice by, being respectful of it. And I think they are being so far, but you're at that point now where you're like, all right, you got one more shot to get it right. Otherwise, you've effed it up.
I would hope so, because this comic is very much about this relationship, right? And so if you haven't thought those angles through, then what are you even doing?
Yep.
You can't introduce this type of thing to the story unless that is the story and you have a resolution to it that is going to be empowering or, tell a valuable lesson, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they've definitely given me the impression the whole creative team has had a really good grip on the story that they're telling so far. And I mean, this issue was, I was terrified. Like, I was that thing. Like, we've not even really, we've seen it. We've seen hints of it or like versions of it. But I just, the way that that entity or ghost or whatever you want to call it has been drawn throughout this comic, where it's always kind of just shadow and candlelight and things like that, is there's something about it that is so terrifying and so menacing. For it to get as angry and as abusive as it did in this issue was really, really impactful. Like, they slow burned to that because there was this false impression that this thing was sweet at the very beginning. And then maybe at one point it was, but it definitely, definitely turned when it had its heart broken, when it didn't get its way.
But isn't that how all abusers are?
Yeah.
That's how they get you in there. But I tell you what, I was more terrified after the last issue where she went to the bedroom. I was like, what kind of spectral herpes are you signing up for? I mean, how are you laying down with what? I didn't quite get it. I was like, that was kind of quick. And
you wouldn't tell me that you would bed down with a ghost just out of curiosity?
I would drape myself in holy water and get the fuck out. Okay. Let me be very clear. I'm not trying to do it. You don't know what. Listen, no.
Aaron's like, that's a level of necrophilia that I do not abide by.
Can't do it. Cannot do it. And I was like, as I read the last issue, I was like, I know we're supposed to walk away from this believing that this is a very sweet and romantic. I'm like, but this is twisted.
It's not sweet and romantic.
No, I mean the last issue. The last issue. Okay. Where she was like, when they were, romantically walking into, I'm like, no, this is a level of psychology that is just next level.
But they've been planting those seeds that it would turn, especially when you get, like I said, you get those glimpses of like the multi-eyed version of, like, it's kind of like almost like parasitic in the way that it looks, that it's kind of all over the place and crawling down from the stairs, and it's a part of the walls and everything. And oh God, the art for this book is so damn good.
I mean, yeah, it really was like the textbook depiction of an abuser though. So I'm not saying looking forward to, I'm anxious to see what the next issue looks like.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it and how it ends. Cause if they do stick the landing, it'll be a very, very, very successful book. I think.
Agreed.
Agreed. John, you got anything you want to say about Silver Coin?
No, I just, I mean, I've been enjoying this, but I really like, I mean, this had some nice nostalgic roots to, you know, hanging out at Aladdin's Castle and playing video games. And I'm glad my experience did not go as horrific as this book went, as it went. It went violent and dark quickly. But no, I too hope that this ends up in a different medium, because I think it has a lot of interesting places it can go.
Yeah, this book definitely goes there. Mm-hmm. I know when they first announced it, they were like, the series is going to get brutal. And I was like, oh, come on. Like, it's Image yeah. Comics. Like, how far are you really going to go? And then it came out and I was yeah. like, oh, all right. I stand corrected.
I enjoyed this one. I didn't like the future one. I think that was last issue. Where
I
they,
don't even remember that
like,
one.
Like, they went to the Mad Max, like, future That's with right. the, yes. the coin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one I did not enjoy. I like more of these. I like the gothic horror, and then I like the when it was like the summer camp, the slasher,
yeah, the slasher absolutely. Stuff.
Yeah,
that was great.
And then this one has that kind of vibe to it. So I like when they kind of stay in this 1980s, 1990s mm-hmm. kind of horror vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. It's good stuff. It's a yeah. it's a fun read, and it's like at the rate that they're coming out. Like, I know I don't usually dip into the anthology style stuff, but this is coming out at a rate that is perfectly, like, I'm perfectly comfortable mm-hmm. with. And I'd like to dip in, like, you're in and out real quick.
And I like that the art's the consistent part. It's, yes. You know, the writing, I mean, there's some really quality writers, but Walsh's art is like the through line. And I think, you know, most anthologies, the writer is the through line yeah. and the art is kind of jarring sometimes. This, I mean, you got some quality art writers and then you just have a stellar artist creating a really solid product.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's it for me. And I think that, we've got some news. Oh, I remember. I meant to mention that I started reading the Incal after the news came out. You're laughing, John.
That's a dive that, I mean, you can get into the in call, then you're going to get into before the in call, then you can get into the after the in call, then you got to get into the meta barons, then you're going to get into the techno priests. You are opening yourself up to a world of weird hurt if you want yourself to.
Well, let me ask you, since you seem to know about it, is it worth taking the journey?
Some of it is. It's I enjoyed. I mean, Mobius is one of those classic artists that everybody needs to experience some of his work. Jodowsky is, we're talking about Dune today. He tried to make Dune in the 1970s, and if he had accomplished what he had planned, that movie would have been amazing. There actually is a documentary about his attempt to make Dune, which is really well done. But this is very European sci-fi. I like the idea of the Meta Barons is this, you know, technically advanced race. And to become the next Meta Baron, you have to kill your previous Meta Baron, basically your parent. And I went to the humanoids dive probably 20 years ago on some of this stuff. And it's consistently good. It's just got a very European sensibility that sometimes is a bit jarring for American readers to get into.
Hmm. Bob, did you want to jump in?
Well, Jodorowsky is not the person you would have anticipated to have made Dune.
Yeah.
He's, you know, just Steve, you know Santa Sangre. That's Jodorowsky.
Oh, I love that movie.
Right. But he has got this singular vision, and it sounds like the Incal is more Jodorowsky-esque, that's a really weird construction, but as opposed to doing straight sci-fi, which they had David Lynch do it. That wasn't a great choice either. Mm-hmm. So
no.
So Incal does sound interesting. How far back is this, John?
Oh, this is 70s.
Yeah.
Late okay. 70s, early 80s. This is the...
Oh, it is El Topo, the Holy Mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All that.
Yeah, so the reason that we're even talking about this is because Taika Waititi is going to be adapting this into a film.
Sure.
Which makes perfect sense.
It does.
So he is directing and writing. He's doing the script, and he'll collaborate with Jermaine Clement, of course, from Flight of the Conchords and What We Do in the Shadows, along with Peter Warren. Clement and Waititi previously teamed on the things I just mentioned. The project is the first foray into film for publisher Humanoids. So it's the first Humanoids comic-based movie.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
And Waititi says, the films and graphic novels of Alejandro Jodorowsky have influenced me and so many others for so long. I was stunned to be given the opportunity to bring his iconic characters to life. So on and so forth. French artist Mobius at the end of the 70s. Devoted readership, yada, yada, yada. The Jodoverse is what they're calling
this. Yeah. Okay. Oh, geez.
Wow.
The foundation of the Jodoverse.
Look, does everything have to be a verse, really?
Okay. We just found our episode title. Yes.
Enter the Jodoverse.
Into the Jodoverse. I love it.
Well, if it's like Kiki Waititi, whether we have the Jojoverse. Jojo Rabbit.
Wow. Okay. At least we got the episode title out of that. I'm just kidding. That was very funny. Okay, let's move on. This sounds cool. I enjoy Taika Waititi a lot as a filmmaker. And from the few pages that I've seen of this, this could end up being a lot of fun and very, very, very weird. So well suited to Mr. Waititi's sensibilities. What else do we got?
Well, speaking of Mobius, but we have to spell it differently.
Oh, Jesus, no. That's right. I forgot that I put this in there. Oh.
Has this movie not come out yet?
Twice. Oh, it's come out twice already.
It's coming out in January.
Oh, my God.
Sony and Marvel. Well, man, they got to get out of the way of everything else. Nothing comes out in January, so you might as well. It's your best shot. So Sony and Marvel dropped a new trailer for the Morbius movie starring Jared Leto that is coming out in January of next year. We just said this has been delayed a couple of times, and it definitely takes place in the Sony Marvelverse because they drop in Venom references, direct Venom references, like they're going out of style.
A cameo.
And a cameo from Mr. Michael Keaton as the Vulture in this trailer. And we get a lot of kind of like Jared Leto using his powers with his sonar and his flying and his scary face and everything like that. And, you know, the metal music in the background and being cool. And, you know, I don't want to like, I don't want to dog on it too much, me personally, just because I said up and down that I had absolutely no interest in seeing Venom. Mm. And I didn't. And I went to go and see that movie, and I unapologetically, I don't want to say I loved it, but I enjoyed it a lot more than some people. And the new one was fun too. And so I'm not going to shit can it yet, but I will say that one, I do not enjoy Jared Leto, that he is not a draw for me for this movie. And I just, the trailers aren't doing it. Like it's not calling out to me. Like even we saw the trailer ahead of, what the hell did we see the other day? Oh, Eternals. It was playing ahead of Eternals and Bronwyn was like tugging on my sleeve and I'm like, what's up? And she's like, we are not seeing that in the theater. Like, well, I might have to for the show. She's like, well, then we're going to a matinee and we're not doing VIP. We'll do a regular theater and maybe you can go without me. Wow. So it just,
it's generic. It's just nothing special.
I just don't like, I'm the first person to say, give other characters movies. Try to expand this stuff out. We don't always need to go for the A-list heavy hitters. you know, I like that we're getting into the thick of it with some other stuff now, especially with the Phase 4, the different feels for the Marvel movies and everything. And there's lots of television stuff. But I just, everything that I see for this movie, I just go, why?
Yeah.
Why? I think that if I had a better idea of what Sony was actually trying to do with their corner of the Marvel Universe, I might feel better about it. But right now, it still seems so aimless. And building out of the Venomverse doesn't feel like a great idea. It doesn't feel like a good foundation for anything.
It feels like they're waiting to figure out, is Spider-Man going to stay in Marvel, or are they going to bring Spider-Man back to this?
Well, according to the end of that last Venom movie, they're definitely going in that direction. But like, we don't even know if Tom Holland is going to continue to play the character, or like how they're going to treat Venom once he meets that character. Because Venom, the Venom that exists in the movies now, is a very different Venom than the one that goes after Spider-Man. And if you don't have any of those ties to the characters, what story are you even telling?
Well, Venom's hinted at in the new No Way Home trailer. So, I mean, it feels is like he? They're going to... Yeah, at the very end, isn't the Venom is like glimpsed? And so I feel like I don't know what they're doing either.
Are you sure that that's him, though? We don't know that.
No, I thought that was the hint.
That's one of those really loose... I mean, that is okay, like...
It doesn't have to end up that way.
The most paper thing. It's like...
Yeah, I don't know. I will probably have to see this movie because my son is getting vaccinated, and one of his wishes is to go to the movies, and Carnage is no longer in the movie theater, and he saw this trailer and he's like, can we go to the Spider-Man vampire movie?
Wow.
So I might end up seeing this in the theater. Now, Jared Leto, I'm kind of surprised that he took this role.
I'm not.
He's an eclectic guy. I just didn't know if...
If you thought you loved my Joker, just wait until you see my Michael Morbius.
But then, you know, some of the other things he's done has been pretty... the Dallas Buyers Club, and
I was gonna say he's an Academy Award winner.
Yeah, I mean,
it's talent, and he's got the accumulated clout now to do other things.
And then I'm assuming 30 Seconds to Mars is doing the score. So this trailer does nothing for me. I have no interest in this movie other than my son is interested in it. Morbius is one of those characters that if he shows up, I'm like, I don't care. He's never done anything for me. I don't know if Sony knows what they're doing, if they're still trying to do a Sinister Six. It's just, this movie feels like they have it in the can. January, nothing comes out. Hopefully people will go see it.
I'll tell you what, if you have to go see it, I'll see it. I'll see it. Okay. So we can talk about it.
Okay. I'll let you know.
All right.
Yeah.
Aaron, did you get to check out this trailer at all?
I did.
And
so okay, I'm gonna solve this whole thing for you guys.
Thank you.
I'm gonna break this all down for you. Here's what Sony is doing. Sony is sitting back in the cut looking at DC and Warner Brothers, saying, okay, they tried this shared universe thing full on. They tried to rush it. It didn't work. They look over at Marvel and they say, okay, Marvel, and also, I'm sorry, looking at DC, and they say, and also DC keeps regurgitating the same three characters or same two characters over and over again. So they look over at Marvel and they say, Marvel had the cojones to take characters that almost no one knew and make them into something big. So let's just keep digging into this well of characters that we've somehow figured out how to use because of our deal with, you know, because, you know, so-and-so was broke decades ago and sold us their characters, and see if we can make that magic strike. And then if it works, then we could say it's part of a shared universe. you know, no harm, no foul. But either way, we'll just keep grabbing it, throwing it against the wall, and seeing what sticks. Doesn't really matter for us, because just because we have the name Marvel on it, even if the movie sucks, they're still going to go into the theaters to see it and make hundreds of millions of dollars. So we can do this all day. That's essentially what's happening. Because even though we all hated those Spider-Man movies, they still made hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
They still made them a hefty profit. They just didn't give them that clout that the MCU gave to Disney. So it's really not about, oh, why is this character here? This character is wrapped up in blah, blah. No. They're like, okay, let's dig a little deeper. This goes back to when we kept seeing all the stories about the Spider-Woman movies and this, that, and the other thing, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's the all Madam related. Web
movie.
Yes, it doesn't matter. They're just whatever sticks, because I seriously believe that if any one of these characters really, really sticks and becomes the next big thing, they will make that the centerpiece and then build out a universe around it and somehow say they all mattered. It all worked. It was all part of our master plan that we came up with about a half an hour before we got the box office.
I mean, Venom has done extremely well for them.
I think it's Venom is that linchpin that they struck on.
I don't think it is giving them the clout, but I think it's giving them enough money to do it. So I think,
Do you think Morbius kills it at the box office? Do you see this being another surprise release for Sony where Venom came out and everybody was like, how much money did it make? Holy shit.
The only way this makes a lot of money is people are feeling COVID fatigue and want to go to a movie theater.
No, I'm telling you. They're going to see Marvel. Half the people – here's what y'all understand. Half the people that walk into these movies do not know that there is no connection between the Sony Marvel movies and the MCU.
Yeah.
They think they're all a part of the same thing. So if they loved all those other 23 movies, they don't know that Venom is not part of it. They don't know all those. I can name so many of my friends who I have to break down and explain to them it's not the same. It's not the same thing. They're not all connected. Blah, 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 blah. The average person going in who didn't – the person who had no idea who Iron Man was, 15 years ago, does not know that there are two different companies releasing Marvel movies. I promise you, they believe the same people who created the X-Men all those years ago – are the same people who put out the MCU. They don't know. So, yeah, they're going to keep going to those theaters because they're ignorant of the truth.
Cultural literacy is at a low.
Exactly.
I predict a $40 million opening weekend.
Okay.
That's not good.
No, it's not.
Nope.
But they'll take it. Because, Sony's hurting for money.
Oh, yeah. They're out there on an island all by themselves. The only studio that isn't, Disney or Warner Brothers.
I'm surprised they just haven't tried to do more with the PlayStation and their own, having their own platform like Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And putting this stuff on that.
Didn't they try that before with all those shows?
They talked about it, but I don't think it went anywhere.
Whoa.
They had a couple shows out there.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Powers, and they had three shows out there at one point.
I mean, Columbia still has a large library of films they could tap into.
Yeah, but they signed an agreement with Netflix.
That was a mistake.
All these Sony movies go to Netflix in it, next year.
Well, I mean, the old stuff. Catalog of stuff back into the 30s. Some of the greatest movies ever made that you could continue to show if you wanted to.
I'm taking a look at the 2022 calendar for movie releases, trying to see what this thing is up against. I didn't realize it's coming out. Supposedly on here, it says January 28th. So all the way at the end of the month. I don't know if this has changed since this posting, but it says January 28th for Morbius. The only other movies that are really coming out, January 7th is the 355. Scream, the new Scream movie comes out January 14th. Very much looking forward to that. The new Sesame Street film drops on that date as well. But other than that, the only thing, something called Gasoline Alley is coming out, I guess, in February, at the start of February.
Based on the old comic strip from the 20s? I doubt it.
I'm not sure. But it's going to have some competition because February 4th, Moonfall, which is a new Roland Emmerich movie.
Oh, yeah.
The Black Phone, which I definitely want to see. That's Scott Derrickson. That movie with Ethan Hawke. That movie looks crazy. I want to see that. And then Jackass Forever comes out February 4th. So half of your Morbius audience is going to go get their Jackass on February 4th.
And Scream 4th, will have legs. Don't kid yourself. That'll be doing well for at least a month.
Yep. Got Army Hammer on the Nile coming out here on February 11th.
What's that one?
And
You can't have a movie come out.
Death on the Nile, the Kenneth Branagh Poirot movie. I liked the
Murder on the Orient Express.
I really liked
that. That was a good movie.
Over and over again, yeah.
Yeah.
And February 18th, Uncharted. That movie's gonna bomb.
It really
is. That's Wahlberg and Holland.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm definitely gonna see it.
I don't know.
Video game movies are hard sometimes.
Sometimes. They got it right with Detective Pikachu.
They did.
Detective Pikachu was great. And for all you can say what you want about Sonic the Hedgehog, it wasn't bad. It was maybe 20 minutes of that movie that was absolutely wretched. And then the rest of it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, but then there's the Lara Croft stuff and Super Mario Brothers.
The Alicia Vikander Tomb Raider was okay. The Angelina Jolie ones were a joke, but those were so long ago.
I'm sorry. Is it me? But I just think Alicia Vikander stinks on ice.
Have you ever seen Ex Machina?
Just has this dead face that just has no emotion.
Which is great when she plays a robot. Come on.
Agreed. But I was watching her. I was really looking forward to her Lara Croft. I really, really was. I'm not kidding. And the whole time I'm like, can you just show any emotion? This whole thing, it was very sort of buttoned up and straight, and just there was no dimension to her acting there. And I'm like, what is the deal with everyone praising her for her acting all this time? I'm like, I don't, even in the Bourne movie, the last Jason Bourne movie, again, I was like, it's like you're emotionally Botox. It's like you can't express anything.
I thought maybe
this is just how she's playing this role. I'm like, okay, well, I saw her in the other movie. I'm like, nope, it's the same thing. She's got no ability to express.
I enjoy her. You should watch Ex Machina. That is a hell of a movie, and she's quite good in it.
I will not.
It is a wonderful piece of science fiction with Oscar Isaac.
I actually may watch it though.
See, Steve, I'm going to bet you own the Lara Croft movies with Angelina Jolie, though.
Bob, I do not.
Really?
Nope.
Okay.
Neither one.
I do.
Dang, I can't remember.
Bought them as a double feature for $8 or something. Angelina Jolie is having a great time playing the character. Is it accurate to the games? No. First of all, she's not pneumatic. She's built like a human being, which is nice. They're fun adventure movies, and as you say, they were made 20 years ago.
Yeah, they were made a long time ago. It's all right. I do not own those movies. I do own the Alicia Vikander one, though. I enjoyed it. They're making another one. Looking forward to it. All right.
Okay.
That's it. That's the show. Let's talk about the books that we're looking forward to this week. I got a crazy long list this week. There must be some, like, overflow or something, because there's a lot of stuff coming out this week, supposedly, allegedly.
Yeah, paper
shortages.
You never know anymore.
No, you don't.
Bob, what do you think you're getting?
I think I'm getting Wonder Woman 781, Harley Animated number 3, and Walter Mosley's Thing number 1. Possibly Maneaters number 5, which is the finale of that. But Please don't sing Hold & Oates. I'm not a fan. Listen to way too much of those from my old partner. Supposed to be this week was the FF Anniversary Tribute Issue and Darkhold Wasp, but those both got booted, as did Captain Marvel 34.
How dare they?
Yep. So who knows?
All right. Aaron, what are you getting?
As I was creating my list, I realized I'm not excited about most of these books, but I feel obligated to some degree. But
wow, high praise.
Really, it was a realization. I'm not even kidding. It was a realization. I'm like, I think a good number of these books have taken a sort of temporary dip, but I will start with the ones that I am actually legitimately excited about. So I am legitimately excited about Strange Academy 13, and I am legitimately excited about Static number 4. The rest I am, well, the next one I'm curious about, I'm curiously excited, that's thing number 1, and Ordinary Gods. Then the rest, Excalibur 25, Miles Morales Spider-Man 32. I say that, I didn't put him at the extremely excited because Taskmaster grates my nerves sometimes. Because they use him the same way in every book. But Hellions 17, Justice League Last Ride number 7, Titans United number 3, and we have Demons number 2. I'm going to show what that's all about.
All right. John, what is on your list?
I'm with Aaron, Excalibur 25, Hellions number 17, Miles Morales 32. But that, I mean, God, they just put him in such a crappy costume. I hate it. It's checked me out of the book because he had such a brilliant costume to begin with.
You know what it looks like? I'm sorry, I had you.
No, go for it.
Base jumpers.
Yeah,
where they have like those wings on their outfits.
Yep,
that's what it looks like.
It reminds me of the Clone Saga Spider-Man with kind of like a modern day. It takes me out every time I look at it.
Hate it.
Anyway, yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Then Batman the Imposter number 2. I am Batman number 3, and then Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen's Robin and Batman number 1. I'm really looking forward to. Yep.
What was that noise?
I lost my voice for a second. I've talked all day. My voice is kind of shot.
That might have been me dry heaving at Robin.
It was. It sounded like Aaron.
Oh, okay. I thought my voice started to get all craggly.
No, are you kidding me? My voice has been dropping in and out for the last couple of weeks on this show. I don't know what's going on with me. But I do know what books I'm looking forward to this week. I am supposedly picking up, here we go, Batman the Imposter number 2, Batman and Robin number 1, Harley Quinn the Animated Series number 3, I already picked up, so I could take that off my list. Huzzah. I am Batman number 3, Wonder Woman 781, The Amazing Spider-Man number 78, Hellions 17, Shang-Chi number 6, Strange Academy 13, Thing number 1. I think Rom V's Venom number 1 starts this week. I might check that out. Mamo number 5, Maze Book number 3, Righteous Thirst for Vengeance number 2, Stillwater 11, and What's the Furthest Place from Here number 1. This is the same team that did 5 Kids Walk into a Bank.
Oh.
So, very fun series. They're back at it. So there you go. All right. Let's do a little bit of house cleaning here. If it works out, I just got an email from Bronwyn and Chris for a little promo for their podcast that they'll be launching sometime soon. I've not listened to it yet, but if it passed snuff, I will share it with you. Meow.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Bronwyn.
And together we are Thirsty on Tune.
Thought.
Thought, which of course means that himbo over there.
Obviously.
Obviously. And we're a new show from the Talking Comics family.
Bringing you comics from webtoons and maybe a little tapas when you want to get a little spicier.
Yes, but only a little spicier. Still very censored.
Very censored.
Not us, though. Completely uncensored over here.
Very, very uncensored over here.
And we have 3 guiding principles of our show that we want to introduce you to. The first being that web comics deserve as much love as regular comics.
Abso-friggin-lutely.
The second is that everything should be gay.
Always.
The gayer, the better.
And let's be honest, everything is, at least a little. Yes. The third principle, of course, is squee! Because you're going to get a lot of that.
You're going to get the most of that ever.
And
Why are we podcasting together, Bronwyn?
Well, you know, we figured that since we were recording a podcast over Snapchat on the daily to each other, we might as well organize.
Yes, we should let other people hear it.
And welcome to the wonderful world of Webtoon.
Yes, welcome to Webtoons with us, with our squeeing and our enjoyment of all things gay.
Absolutely. And enjoy it, we do.
Oh, we do. We're going to enjoy it. And you can enjoy it with us. And if you want to enjoy it along with us, what should they read for our first episode?
Well, our first episode is on My Gentle Giant, which is just the sweetest, most adorable little gay story that ever existed.
Absolutely the gayest, the sweetest, and we will squee about it.
Yes. Oh, yes.
There so will come be squee. Come be thoughts with us.
Welcome. Welcome. Join us.
And we're back from the promo.
That was a great promo.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. The best. Yeah.
I can't wait to listen to that show.
Nothing but quality. Nothing but quality here at Talking Comics. Seriously, thank you to Chris and Bronwyn for sharing that with us. Beyond that, we'll have the rotating chair coming back next week with a special guest, Miss Melissa Megan. We'll be coming back to the show, probably talk about some horror comic books, if I had to guess. maybe a little bit of news about her recent vacation. I have no idea, but nonetheless, we will have Melissa here and maybe another guest or two in the weeks leading up to our best of shows. But like we said, those are coming up soon. So look forward to those. If you've not checked out the award shows that we usually do, you can go back in previous years and check those episodes out. We always have a lot of fun doing them. And seriously, reach out to us. Tell us what your favorite comics have been this year. Maybe you can influence somebody to read something before the deadline.
Be a Sunday quarterback and not a Monday morning quarterback.
Yes. And does anybody else have any closing statements?
Nope.
Nothing to share. Wow. Okay. We've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. As always, you can send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We do check the email. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Tweet us your questions, your requests, your favorite books from the year, whatever. We've also got TalkingComicBooks.com, where you can find reviews and features from our fantastic contributors. There's been a couple of really awesome things going up lately, and we encourage you to check them out. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Still the old-fashioned email, BobRyer@TalkingComicBooks.com.
Huzzah. Joey is @JoeyBrachino online. Aaron, how about you?
@AaronJOmos.
Where'd you go?
He's on mute.
Why?
I don't know.
Probably Mocha.
Yeah.
All right. He's Aaron.
Wow. I didn't even mute myself that time. I don't even know how I got on mute. I'm not even touching my thing. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. I was sitting here rambling on. I don't know. I literally didn't even touch my mouse. I don't even know how I went on mute. I wonder if
what
I
is
a key.
What is your
maybe you have a maybe you have a poltergeist.
I don't know. I'm like not even touching my keyboard or my mouse. That's
the Aaron you love in the dark.
I must have pissed off a ghost somewhere. It's like, how dare you,
John? How about you?
@JohnPBurkle.
I am @dead_anchoress on the Twitter and the Instagram. Stay tuned over the next couple of weeks because we have some exciting announcements, maybe the launch of a little something that you can get down on. We'll have more details on that very shortly. So for Bob.
Nighty night.
For Aaron.
What he said.
For John.
What they said.
And for me. Be excellent to each other. Stay safe out there, and thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next time on the Talking Comics podcast. To be continued.